All right, the Shilling Show rolls on here. It is a Turbo Tuesday edition. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management. Online at muradaonmoney.com. Today's continuing series, looking backward on socialism and the high cost of quote-unquote free education for all. David, what a ruse. It's so odd that people are willing to believe. When you and I were growing up, you'll remember, as I will, and I don't hear it anymore, there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Yep, that was a made famous by some science fiction novels, and certainly true. There is no such thing as a free lunch, and everything has a price, at least with unintended consequences. And quite often people who believe in, you know, free this and free that, you know, the progressives tend to be economic science deniers. It's like they don't believe that science, the science of economics actually exists, and they just make it up. Here's what's going to happen. It's all going to be a utopia.
We should start out with a brief premise of the book, looking backward, because this is the basis for this series we've been doing over the past many months.
Yeah, and for those who think, oh gosh, you know, you're just cherry picking some, you know, topics of modern, the science fiction novel Looking Backward was written in 1888, so mm-hmm. We're not cherry picking, the news today. The ideas of socialism have been around for a long time. They didn't work back then, and they don't work now. Looking Backward was a science fiction novel written by Edward Bellamy, and it was someone falls asleep and goes into a trance in 1887 and wakes up in a socialist utopia of the United States in the year 2000. And everything that is the principles of socialism are really contained in this science fiction book. In fact, the science fiction book was so popular in its time that it really gave rise to most of the socialist thought of the 1920s and 1930s. It inspired the people who inspired Bernie Sanders. It's really just two leaps, mm-hmm. To get to the socialists of today that are running for president. And so it's very interesting to see all of the themes within the book, because they're the same themes of today. And in chapter 21 of Looking Backward, Dr. Leet, who's the tour guide of the book showing the newly awakened person around the socialist utopia, has an entire chapter in which they devote the next morning to an inspection of the schools and colleges of the city. And they just talk about education and how education is free and what it looks like. And so there's a whole chapter, and in the article I've been working on, I really have quoted the entire chapter and just made comments on it, because it has all of the components of today. And one of the very first things is, of course, all persons equally have those opportunities of higher education, because it's all free for everyone. And the person who's awakening in this new world says, the cost must have been very great. And they say, oh, no, the cost, even if it was great, it would have been worth it. But the cost was actually small. And the first way that the cost is small is that the pay grades of all the teachers are no more than a first-year graduate. So since everyone gets paid a low amount of money, education is free and affordable for everyone, because no one makes very much. It's sort of the one of the first socialist principles, and that is, if you want to keep the cost of something low, you just look at what you're paying people and you say, mm-hmm. Well, they shouldn't make that amount of money. They should mm-hmm. just make less. Which is interesting, because that's not the argument that's being given today of how to get free education, mm-hmm. Even though, that's the argument that socialists would use for any other industry. If this were any other industry, then Bernie Sanders would be saying something like, why should big education make such a large profit off poor, ignorant students who simply want to be trained for a living wage job?
This is great. What a wonderful point, because that's what we're hearing in medicine. Like, why would the big pharmaceutical, or why does big medicine make all this money off the poor people? We should take the profit out of it.
Exactly right. So anytime you put big in front of something and you look at the top salaries of mm-hmm. an industry, you come up with, wow, they really are making a lot of money. I looked up University of Virginia, according to the Daily Progress. This is a 2010 article, but it's still true today. Mm-hmm. UVA faculty pay highest in the state. The UVA faculty here, if they really wanted to get affordable education, well, they should just make less. They should all take lower salaries. Back in 2010, the average salary for a UVA full professor was $134,700.
Wow, nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, and even today, I looked up, they have online from 2019 the salaries, and there are several faculty that earn over $300,000, $400,000, or even $500,000. UVA faculty, and I think they're paying the going rate for the positions that they're offering.
But is the rate inflated? I mean, the going rate, is that really truly a market-based rate, or is the whole underlying suspension of this false?
Yeah, that's another interesting question, because the economics of education has really been changed by the federal government. In 1972, only 49% of high school graduates went to college. Grants covered 80% of the associated costs. And up until that point, college was relatively affordable and college costs rose comparable to inflation. So that was 1972. The Higher Education Act was first signed into law in 1965, but it's been updated 8 times and the updates have been significant. In 1972, reauthorization added the Pell Grant. It was the first time we started providing extensive grants for middle and lower income. And in 1975 is the turning point where college costs begin to rise at an inflation at a rate much faster than inflation. So It was because we started giving lots of money to colleges, and the person paying and the person receiving the benefit and the person deciding if the student was accepted were three different people, that the economics broke. Because students could go, it didn't cost them anything other than these, you know, sort of Pell Grants. And then colleges could just accept students, and then people who paid was the federal government.
And the poor suckers on the other end.
Yep.
Holding the bill due. All right. David Marotta is our guest. We're talking about the high cost of free education, looking backward on socialism and today's socialism, still living in a fog of unreality, and as he said, economic deniers. The Shilling Show continues on the other side of news and weather, and we welcome you. Agree or disagree? Comments, questions, criticisms, challenges, 977-1070 is the phone number. Samantha stands by to take your calls politely and professionally. We continue in just moments with David Marotta. Stay with us.
This old house is getting shaky. This old house is getting old.
All right, Shilling Show rolls on here. Turbo Tuesday edition of the program. Coming up in hour number two, John Whitehead, Rutherford Institute on the pornification of America. Right now, we continue. David Marotta of Marotta Wealth Management online, MarottaOnMoney.com. Looking backward on socialism, the high cost of free education for all. I want to get your take on this because this was, and I don't want to be rude because the people responsible may be listening, but one of the dumbest ideas I ever heard in my life. Came from our one of our recent 5th District congressmen and some members of his staff. And they said, OK, here's how we're going to solve the problem of student debt. We're going to have something called, I think it was called student security, where if you would forego a couple years of Social Security payment on the back end, we'll forgive your student debt on the front end. And I'm thinking, you know, that's just opening up for some other socialist to come in and say, oh, these poor people, they were tricked and duped all those years ago, and we're going to put them back in the system. I mean, you know, there's probably better ways to solve the problem, but that wasn't it. Oh, sorry. There we go.
Yeah, it's exactly true. You know, you're always trying to figure out how can you solve an immediate problem for someone else. And the correct answer is, when the government tries to solve problems like that for everyone, they usually just make bad decisions. You know, let's take all of your retirement money that should be enough for you to retire as a millionaire, and we're going to take it, and we're going to call it Social Security, and then you're going to live off Social Security in retirement when you could have been a millionaire. It's just anytime the government gets involved, costs are higher, and then someone else comes along and says, well, now you've put them in a pinch somewhere else, and I've got a big heart, so I'm just going to eliminate that pinch too.
With my money.
Right, with someone else's money, yeah. And that's the problem with socialism, is you always run out of someone else's money because there's no incentives not to spend.
You know, I think about all this, and my advice to people, and I hear this whining, complaining, and my advice is don't take the loan. Don't take the loan. You know, it's very simple to say, okay, someone's going to give me a bunch of money and I'll worry about it down the line. But the way that you did it, we were talking off air, the way that I did it, the way that my parents-in-law did it, and probably people that we know, was, hey, we worked our way through. We didn't get in over our heads on the front end, and it was much better for us on the back end.
Yeah, I don't. As I was commenting off air, I don't think I've ever been in school and not had a job. I had a part-time job when I was at Stanford, When I was doing my master's at the University of Oregon in computer science, I was also teaching computer science at a community college. I got my CFP while I was working full-time as a financial advisor. So so I don't think I've ever not had both an education component and also a pretty significant job at the same time. There's a lot of ways of reducing the cost of education, even in our broken system. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we work with our clients to help them do that. But really, the system got broken because of the government involvement. We were talking before the break. In 1972, they added Pell Grants. And then in 1992, you know, they started to do direct lending. They kicked out all the private lenders in 2010. Mm-hmm. And in 2011, that's when the New York Times ran the article, student loan default rates sharply rise in the past year.
That was a coincidence, right?
Right, yeah. And you know, and in 2010, they did that because they thought, oh, student loans, you know, people always pay back their student loans. It's really easy to do because they've gotten a good college education. And this is because only good students were taking the student loans. Mm-hmm. They weren't being pushed on everybody. So if the government takes it over, we can make money. And they counted on all of the profits from taking over the student loan business to be able to pay for Obamacare. Well, it turns out their profits very, very quickly turned into deficits. Mm-hmm. You know, and the Wall Street Journal had a great article called the Great Student Loan Scam. Mm-hmm. And they talk about, you know, the CBO has slowly scaled back its 10-year revenue projections for student loans, you know, to a $31.4 billion government cost. You know, from a $219 billion revenue. So it went from being profitable to do student loans, and this is going to pay for Obamacare, to, you know, Obamacare is going to be paid for on the backs of student loans to young children, you know, young teenagers. And then it switched over to now it's costing the government, you know, $31 billion. and the administrative costs for running the whole program skyrocketed because it became part of the government. You know, the private lenders could do it and keep it streamlined because they were actually trying to make a profit from this whole thing. And they were making a profit. And now the federal government is just losing money on the whole thing because it's been nationalized. So, you know, the first thing that the government does is they ruin the economics and then they drive up the costs. And then after they've driven up the costs, then they say, well, we need to take the whole thing over and just nationalize it. We're just going to give students a free education because it costs way too much because now we've ruined all the economics from it.
You know, there was another solution proposed by one of our senators, Tim Kaine, and I'm sure there were others on board with this. But again, I found it offensive and dangerous. We're going to forgive the student loan debt of people that go to work for the government in certain areas that we deem are necessary and good. So if you want to go be a doctor in Southwest Virginia, or you want to teach in a district that's having difficulties, we'll pay for your education. We'll forgive those debts. To me, this is nothing more than indentured servitude, government offering this sort of thing for you basically hitching yourself to their wagon and just becoming a serf.
Yeah, there's already some of those provisions in the Student Loan Acts now. You can have your student loans forgiven if you work in certain medical areas in unserved communities and stuff like that. So that's really already part of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a lower repayment, and then at the end of 10 years, whatever you haven't paid off is forgiven. But the difficulty, socialists very much like this idea of a national army that's going to be doing service for the good of the government. And wouldn't mm-hmm. it be great if everyone did 2 years of service in this or 2 years of service in that? It's never service in the military they want. They always want service in something other than the military, mm-hmm. some national service. The problem with that is the same problem that you have with the draft, and that is you don't want everyone in America to be serving in your army because some of those people are not competent, they're addicted to drugs, they're just not the right candidates. So what do you do when you're trying to hire something for a very important government service and the person who has the student loan and is now coming to you saying, great, I'll work for you for a couple of years to get my student loan written off. And what you really want is someone who feels like this is their calling, mm-hmm. and they're well suited for the task that you're hiring them for. The government shouldn't be forced to hire anyone simply to get their student loan forgiven. Hiring is a very difficult process. You're trying to find the right candidate who's going to do this job and feel called to it. It has to have the right level of challenge. It has to be somebody who's well prepared for the task. there's just a lot of things going on in hiring, and somehow socialists think, well, everybody is useful in some capacity, and they're denying again the economics of what it takes to do a good hiring for a private company. They're just ignoring all of that and saying, well, just everybody will chip in our commune and pick some, you know, pick some beets, and then we can have beets for dinner.
It didn't work well in Jamestown or Jonestown.
No, it didn't. there is an economics of the whole thing, and some people are worth more than others in terms of their productivity. And socialists just don't want to, they don't want to acknowledge that, which is why in looking backward, every single educator, no matter how good they are, how suited they are, mm-hmm. makes the same thing as a first-year graduate.
It's why income inequality is a necessary thing, a natural thing, and in fact, a good thing. Because if you paid everybody the same, where's the incentive for somebody to go to school for 10 years to be a brain surgeon if they're going to get paid the same as the guy who just cleans out the lobby?
Exactly right. And if you're willing to have a lower salary, you can do whatever you want in life. Mm-hmm. I always like to say, if you're willing to to live in very low income housing and not have a great lifestyle, you can afford not only to be a poet, you can afford to be a bad poet.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not going to make very much money, but if that's what you think your calling in life is, you're able to do that if you can keep your standard of living low enough.
I think about my own grandmother who came here from Italy in the early part of the 1900s, never was wealthy, never went to college, basically took care of other people as kind of a nurse and lived in a very, very modest apartment for her whole life. But she loved to travel, and she went around the entire world. She went to Japan. She went to China. She went to the Galapagos Islands. I have pictures of her when she was close to 80 years old, up to her neck in the water, being held up by natives in the Galapagos. But that's what she wanted to do. And it wasn't important for her to have a nice car or a nice home or nice furniture. She decided, this is how I'm going to spend whatever little amount I earn over the years.
Yeah, and that's the choice that you want to give people. You want to give people a choice of how they want to spend their money. College is expensive right now, and even if it were free, everyone would not choose to attend. You know, Bernie Sanders is trying to make free college for all, but Bernie Sanders is also the one who's saying 67% of high school graduates are not prepared for college. Well, that means that the top 33, the elite 33 privileged percent that probably went to private schools or went through the AP ranks mm-hmm. of our public schools, those are the ones you're going to give a free college education to, because the other 67 are not prepared to actually take advantage of it. And it's sort of another question is, why do you want to be giving such an expensive amount of money for free college to the most privileged 33% of American youth? The people who go to college and get education tend mm-hmm. to be both whiter and richer and more liberal. And to help that group, why aren't you helping the people who decide not to go to college and they're going to go start their business? Maybe we should just give them $40,000 to start their business. That would be fair, because they according to all the statistics, they're going to have a lower income. And maybe you should help them out even more than you should help out the people going to college.
That's a great point. Unfortunately, no one ever asks that of Bernie or his friends. All right, we got one more segment left with David Morata. The phone lines are open. 977-1070 is the phone number. We'll get your calls on the other side as we continue to look at the high cost of free education for all. Stay with us. All right, into the final segment of today's Time with David Morata. 977-1070, the high cost of free education for all. Phone lines are open, and let's go to our callers here before we run out of time. We say hello to Greg. Greg, welcome to the Shilling Show.
Hey, Rob. Hey, David. I always loved David. Of course, David would scold me because I didn't set up a retirement for my old age, so I'm going to have to work to the year 100. But anyway, a lot of life catastrophes took it away. But I'm happy as a lark. I don't make any money, and I'm happy as a lark. And I'm just very grateful for everything I've got. But let me just say this. This whole thing about education fall is so silly because, you know, I have a son who – two of my sons went to VCU, and I have four sons. And one of them, you know, he got out with his liberal arts degree and couldn't really get a job. So he had to go get a welding certificate, and he went to the shipyards and made really good money. And he got, of course, tired of that after 5 years, and now he's working for another construction company. But I know a kid, and I don't want to say his name or who he is, but he does mechanical work, and he has his own, mobile mechanical service for heavy equipment and stuff. I mean, this kid's in his 20s, And I think his billing rate is around $75 or $80 an hour. And, I mean, you figure that times 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, that's a hell of a salary. Excuse me, I didn't even use that word on the radio. Apologize. And so my question is, why would you motivate kids who are not academic to get in liberal arts and pay for it and it have no value, and then they go work in the local coffee house, which there's nothing wrong with that, don't get me wrong, and not do very well? It makes no sense to me, and I'll just get off and get your comments.
Yeah, Greg, thank you.
Yeah, Greg, I've got a whole section of the article where I sort of ask the question, you know, if everyone goes to college, then the benefit of going to college actually sort of diminishes and can completely disappear. When you ask university students what they want to do for a living, you know, you might think there's only a few professions in the world. It's like pre-med or pre-biz or, you know, pre-law or something like that. And then you get out of college and you ask people what they're actually doing for a living, and you realize there are answers that you have never thought of. You know, in my own social circle, I know a person who repairs pipe organs, is a dance instructor, a general handyman, walks and babysits dogs. You know, I know of people running drum circles and fantasy band camps.
Radio hosts.
you know, people who love to bake and specialize in cupcakes for birthday parties, people who design games for a living. You know, all of these really interesting careers. And, you know, I happened to sit in on a tax class. It was our homework was doing 1040s every week. So it was really interesting. I enjoyed it a great. It was out at PVCC. Yeah. What I noticed was about half of the class had just graduated from UVA with an English degree. And here they were. Now they were taking a tax class so that they could go do taxes because they couldn't find anything else. So I just think you need to figure out what it is you really want to do with life. And a college education can be of great benefit depending upon the student, the college, and the course of study. Depending on the student, the college, and the course of study, college may not be the right answer for some people. They may just want to go into some job that they've really loved. And I always advocate for teenagers to explore a lot of job opportunities before they decide to go to college, because you really do want to have tried a lot of different things, or at least sat next to somebody else who's doing it,
right,
so you can see what it looks like. So,
indeed.
You know, it's really important that way.
All right. We got just a couple minutes left. Jordan's been waiting for us. Go right ahead, please. You're on with David Murata.
All right, thank you. I've heard a couple of men from the Virginia Vocational Training Program, and they talk to actual businesses and say, what do you need and what have you seen coming out of trade schools? Again, this is just a generalization, but one of the big complaints of the employer is that they're not properly trained for the job they're doing. And what I'm saying is I went through a technical program through Piedmont to get the degree in mechanical technology, which is you get a designer, like a machine designer job, tooling engineer, that type of thing. And we only just briefly went over the concepts of tolerances, which is the lifeline of any kind of design that you make. And so I was rather embarrassed. Okay, here's this guy with a two-year associate's in this field, and he doesn't know how to work tolerances so that the machine room can build what he designs. And so I was starting behind the eight ball. And I've seen other people that say, young people that say, oh, yeah, I got 2 years, 5 years experience with carpentry. And they can't lay out a wall for framing. So I guess the point is, if you want to advance, you really have to know your stuff and put in that extra hour at the end of the day. Buy those more quality tools. And that whole attitude, I don't know where it's been lost, that you have to instill this professionalism, whether you're, you know, a garbage man, a carpenter, or whatever.
Yeah, we're running on up against the wall here, Jordan, but I hear you. It's the pursuit of excellence, I think, David, which is evidently gone from our society in many ways. We've got about a minute to wrap up.
Yeah, I have a line in the article that I'm working on. More important than a college education is the openness to lifelong learning and new ideas. Mm-hmm. It really does matter. We hire some wonderful students who come out of Virginia Tech's certified financial planning coursework. And the nice part about that is they really have learned all the vocabulary and the ideas and the concepts. Then we add our training on top of that because we have sort of a specialized way of doing stuff. And the two together are good. They come out of college prepared to then start learning the things they need to learn for actually mm-hmm. practicing the discipline. And those two together are both necessary. I don't know how easy it is for colleges to train someone on everything, but if they train them on the concepts, then they're prepared to sort of go do the on-the-job training, and the two really need to work in concert. We work with a lot of university professors, and we work with a lot of small business owners, and I think what I like about those two groups the most is they really admire each other. Mm. The university professor says, you know, I'm doing the theoretical part, but the business owners really understand, you know, where the rubber meets the road, and the business owners say, I'm doing the practical stuff, but I don't understand all the theoretical stuff. The university professors really understand that, and I think that's the harmony between the two, that they have that kind of common respect for each other, that they're both really necessary to have the work done correctly.
He's online, maradaonmoney.com. It's been a great hour. I wish we had two on this subject. Anyway, David Marotta, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.